Welcome to Bhakti Sangha Jappa conference call. We are very fortunate to have His Grace Nitya Krishnadas Prabhuji on the call today to enlighten us on Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, 16th chapter and 4th verse onwards. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, are you there?
Hare Krishna Matati, Dhanwad Pranams, all glory to Srila Prabhupada and Gurudev.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dhanwad Pranam, all glory to Srila Prabhupada and Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much for joining and giving your valuable association and time this morning, Prabhuji. You can take over the call, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna, thank you.
Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrita Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udhiriye. Nasta prayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavate tam shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Hare Krishna, then our pranams to all assembled Vaishnavas. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss this most glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge. So, been asked to speak today on Canto 4, Chapter 16, verse number 4. The title of the chapter is Praise of King Prithu by the Professional Reciters. So, we'll read verse 4. Esha dharma britam shreshto lokam dharme anuvartayan gopta cha dharma shetunam shasta tat paripantinam. Esha, this king Prithu, dharma britam, of persons executing religious activities, shreshtaha, the best, lokam, the whole world, dharma, in religious activities, anuvartayan, engaging them properly, gopta, the protector, cha, also, dharma shetunam, of the principles of religion, shasta, the chastiser, tat paripantinam, of those who are against religious principles. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This king, Maharaj Prithu, is the best among those who are following religious principles. As such, he will engage everyone in the pursuit of religious principles and give those principles all protection. He will also be a great chastiser to the irreligious and atheistic. Purport. The duty of the king or head of government is described very nicely in this verse. It is the duty of the government head to see that people strictly follow a religious life. A king should also be strict in chastising the atheists. In other words, an atheist or godless government should never be supported by a king or a governmental chief. That is the test of good government. In the name of secular government, the king or governmental head remains neutral and allows people to engage in all sorts of irreligious activities. In such a state, people cannot be happy despite all economic development. However, in this age of Kali, there are no pious kings. Instead, rogues and thieves are elected to head the government. But how can people be happy without religion and God consciousness? The rogues exact taxes from the citizens for their own sense enjoyment. And in the future, people will be so much harassed that according to Srimad Bhagavatam, they will flee from their home and country and take shelter in the forest. However, in Kali Yuga, democratic government can be captured by Krishna-conscious people. If this can be done, the general populace can be made very happy. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dirati Swapadantikam Vanneyam Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamstra Shri Rupam Sagajatam Saganaragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Paridhanasaitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Dakta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanuste Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Vishnu Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Devi Gauravani Prasarine Nirvishesha Shunivari Paschatadeshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So, seek the blessings of all assembled Vaishnavas so that we may have a fruitful discussion today on this most wonderful section of Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of King Prithu. So, just a little summary or recap to set the stage for where we are in this narration. King Prithu has appeared from the body of King Vena. And he appeared with very, very auspicious signs, indicating that he is a Shaktivesha avatar of Lord Vishnu. Very important to note that King Prithu himself does not claim such position. It is not a self-made position. But it was affirmed by the sages who affirmed it not on sentiment, but on the symptoms as described in Shastra. And so we understand the great position of King Prithu. He is the incarnation of the ruling force of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada describes. Krishna is expert in everything. And one of his expertise is in ruling. And King Prithu is the incarnation of this feature of the Lord. So we're going to see great ruling leadership teachings in this pastimes that will continue for many chapters. Quite a contrast to the ruling of King Vena. And you can see, again, the great ability of this and the expert ability of the sages. You know, they turned a bad situation into the best of situations. As we say, turning lemons into lemonade. So King Prithu was quickly coronated as king, and it was celebrated with great pomp and circumstance. Great, great personalities came and presented many wonderful things. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra, Kubera, Vayu. And so from this we get an indication that this is a big deal. This is an extraordinary situation taking place with King Prithu ascending to the throne. Certainly when great, great people celebrate something, we can understand something important is happening. And it's an indication for us that there must be some great things we can learn from this pastime. We see in the prior chapter, even the seas and rivers made their offerings. Mountains and rivers would move to make way for his chariot. So we can see how there was great cooperation amongst all participants, even the inanimate rivers and mountains. This is a sign of a great ruler. There's great cooperation and working together for success, collective success. So at the end of the last chapter, we see a great sign of King Prithu's character. And it's nice to explore the character of great personalities, as it can be inspirational for us in how to bring about these characteristics within us. And at the end of the chapter, King Prithu is very nicely displaying his humility. When Sutta and Magadha and others were offering great prayers and glorification of King Prithu, he very politely declined that glorification and asked them to stop, saying it is not appropriate to glorify something that one does not have is actually, he says, an insult. And I wanted just to read the 25th verse. It's a very, touching verse of the 15th chapter, where he says, "As a person with a sense of honor and magnanimity does not like to hear about his abominable actions, a person who is very famous and powerful does not like to hear himself praised." It's almost a peculiar verse, because everyone around us and all we see today is quite the opposite. Those who are famous and powerful, they want to continue to hear of their praise. But King Prithu is saying that actually a good-hearted, good-minded person does not like to hear one's praise. And so we see, this position of great humility. And he continues, and he says, I prefer that you stop this glorification. But this humility further inspired these professional reciters to offer glorification. And so this is where we are now in the 16th chapter. The reciters have declined King Prithu's request, very, again, politely, and begin to glorify him, though they claim they're not able to completely glorify, get to the end of King Prithu's glories. And Srimad Bhagavatam, we see throughout Srimad Bhagavatam this offering of glorification or prayers. We just came, off of the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, and we saw, great prayers throughout this pastime. And this is something we see over and over again in Srimad Bhagavatam. And as we know, Vandanam, it's one of the 9 processes of devotional service. And Prahlad Maharaj guides us that one should offer prayers, and it's according to one's abilities. And we remember when Dhruva Maharaj first came in, had audience of Lord Vishnu, he could not speak. He didn't know what to speak. But by the mercy of Krishna, he became enlightened in how to offer prayers to the Lord. So, yes, we cannot cover the full extent of the glories of Krishna or his devotees, but it is for our great benefit to glorify such devotees. And Krishna says glorification is of his devotees is more pleasing than glorification of he himself. And it is a great practice of devotional service to offer prayers and glorification. So we'll have an opportunity today and for the coming weeks and maybe months to glorify a great personality, a great devotee of the Supreme Lord, King Prithu. And we can measure our progress in bhakti by how much taste we have for glorifying Krishna and his devotees. Compare that to how much taste we have for glorifying ourselves. And this glorification, it should be heartfelt. We often, when we encounter and engage with devotees, we receive each other with Dandavat pranams, please accept my humble obeisances. That is coming from our mouth. And the question is, what is residing in our heart when we utter such pranams? Are we in our consciousness actually offering our pranams, establishing the glorious position of such devotee we have come to meet? So it ultimately does not matter what our understanding of how to glorify or what is spoken. It's more important, what is our consciousness? What resides within our heart in glorifying these great personalities? So we may externally be glorifying, but more important is what's internally happening within us. So that is, this is the key to our prayers. Volumes of flowery language and beautifully composed prayers is not what's important. It's the consciousness, the devotion, the love that exists in such of these prayers. And so we're all qualified to offer prayers to whatever our ability is. And we're being encouraged to do so. And we'll hear from the professional reciters, and we can learn how they are glorifying King Prithu in such a way. So in this verse, I'll just read the verse again. This is their first glorification that is being offered here, at least direct glorification. So they say, this king, Maharaj Prithu, is the best among those who are following religious principles. As such, he will engage everyone in the pursuit of religious principles and give those principles all protection. He will also be a great chastiser to the irreligious and atheistic. So the purport that Srila Prabhupada presents provides, really nice statements and very strong positions. And they're very clear and factual positions that we can try to unpack one by one. So Srila Prabhupada establishes right in the opening of their purport that the duty of the king is very clear. And it's very, very precise. The duty of the king is to engage everyone in the pursuit of religious principles. And now this is very counterintuitive, or not, I shouldn't say intuitive, but is opposed to what we see today. And we'll discuss a little bit about that and this movement towards kind of secular government. But if we think about the goal of any leader, the goal of any leader is to see success of the followers. You know, if I am leading a family, my goal is to see the success of my family. If I'm leading a soccer team, my goal is to see success of those players. You know, if I'm leading a school of the students. So like that, the leader of the society, its goal is to see success of the citizens. It's the same goal. And ultimately, we can define success by one criteria: to extent there is peace and happiness. That is the goal of every living entity, to find peace and happiness. And so we can measure the leader's success by the degree of peace and happiness that exists within the kingdom. And we've seen from great, great kings like Lord Ramchandra, how much peace and happiness there was. Yeah. And we'll see by this rule of King Prithu the same. So we know how to get this success, how to get this peace and happiness. That is the quest every living entity is on, this search for happiness. And Krishna explains throughout the Bhagavad Gita that there is Dukkhalayam and Ashashvatam, that is the nature of this material world, from the highest planet to the lowest. It is but full of misery. So we are trying to find happiness in this place that is full of misery. And how it can happen? Well, we know it cannot happen in separation of Krishna. But Krishna says there is means to find happiness within even this material world.
which is full of dukkha, one can find happiness. And the only way to do it, the absolute only way to get there, is through devotional service. The living entity cannot be happy in separation from Krishna. It is impossible. Just as a fish separated from water can never be happy. Just as that, any living entity separated from Krishna cannot be happy. So if the leader, the king, is desiring to establish happiness and peace in society, we know it must come in connection from with Krishna. And Krishna gives very concrete statements in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Mam chayo vibacharena bhakti yogena sevata sagunan samititayatan brahma bhuya kalpate. He says that one who's engaging in devotional service unfailingly, meaning consistently, that person at once, means quickly, immediately, not next life, but at once, can transcend these modes of nature. These modes of nature which are tossing us left and right, up and down, through so many trials and tribulations. But Krishna is saying, by unfailing devotional service, one can at once transcend that. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, he gives the verse, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashotati Nakankshati Samasarvesh Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. He says, Brahma Bhuta, when one becomes realized, they become Prasanatma, fully joyful. There is no more hankering, no more lamentation. A well-wisher of everybody. This happens through self-realization, re-establishing the relationship with Krishna. You know, how many rulers would love to claim that their followers, their citizens are fully joyful? They have no hankering. They have no lamentation. And they are friendly with all of their fellow citizens. A ruler would be considered a great success. So how to have it, it's very clear. It is through spiritual practice. Srila Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion gives further evidence, saying that how to become free from this klesha, this material distress, it only comes from practice of pure devotional service. This klesha agni, this is one of the characteristics awarded to the practitioner of pure devotional service, that one becomes free, immediate relief from all of the material suffering. And he goes on to explain, what is the root cause of our suffering? He says there are three causes of our suffering. Avidya, papam, the sinful activities, and bijam, these sinful desires. But of the three, the root cause is our avidya. Ignorance, not ignorance of who won the sports match yesterday or who is, what the stock market is doing. Not ignorance of that. Ignorance of our relationship with Krishna, our sambandha gyan. This relationship with Krishna, when we forget it, it leads to our suffering. So the leaders of society have a very clear and perfect path to establishing success. And there's only one means to do it, to establish religious principles amongst all the followers and to suppress irreligious activities. It is a dual track activity of the leader. Must encourage spiritual life and discourage irreligious life. And good leaders, they are not neutral or soft to irreligion. They are quite firm. And Srila Prabhupada comments that the good government should be very strong in fighting these atheistic tendencies. Good leaders, they have both power and character. When we see the combination of both power and character, great things can happen. When we see just power but no character, very bad things happen. We've seen In the pastimes of Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, you know, more recent history, Hitler and Idi Amin, and so many rulers, great power, but not great character. But if you have great character to guide the use of power, then leadership, heads of society can perform great things. And so this combination is really, really important. And so, you know, what is the test of a king's good leadership? It's very clear. It is not GDP growth or unemployment rates or crime rates or literacy rates. You know, we put so many of these measures, but it's really a single factor that will define success of bringing about peace and happiness. And that is, to the extent the citizens are following the scriptural injunctions, the religious principle. That is the measure. Measure of progress is by this. And Srila Prabhupada comments that we can further evaluate progress in society by the factor of how well the cows are protected and how well the brahmanas are protected. To the extent this is being propagated in society, there will be success. Cow protection and protection of the brahmanas who are helping to establish and disseminate these religious principles. Right? So this is the duty of the king. It's very, very clear. And the concept of religious leadership has been shunned in today's world. And there is some reason for that. This idea of secularism has been brought up or come about due to some improper application of spiritual guided leadership, I should say. Yeah. When one religion claims to be superior to another and tries to oppress or forcefully impose its beliefs on others, and there's been great atrocities in the history of man, particularly over the last 1,000 years or so, that has led to the popularity of this non-religious state, this secular state. But in reality, the improper implementation of the spiritual-led, spiritual-guided leadership is not the rationalization of this effective leadership. So, you know, we see current leaders, they impose so many rules on their citizens. So it's not about imposing laws or not. It's the question of where should the laws come from? And the problem in a secular state is that the government is proposing man-made laws, which by definition will be imperfect and will not create a perfect result. Whereas by the imposition of God's laws, one can find perfect results. Right? And so we see this today. You know, man-made laws are promoting so many things, killing of animals and you know, promotion of sinful activities, not stopping these illicit affairs and cheating propensities and things like this. And so it leads to not very good outcomes. So a saintly government, a spiritually led government, doesn't mean there isn't room for a variety of religion. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, preached this heavily. He said, you know, I'm not here to convert people. I'm here to help people remember name of God. And if you don't have a name of God, I can give you one. But the point is, follow your bona fide religion, whatever it may be, but follow it according to Shastra. When it says, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not kill. So this idea of spiritually guided leadership, it is not opposed to varieties of religion. There's a tolerance and an acceptance of bona fide spiritual paths. And so this idea of the secular state, it's not working. And it's very clear. We can measure it by the happiness that exists in society today compared to the happiness that existed in societies led by these saintly kings. It is very clear and easy to see. So the purpose of these laws are clear. It is to help society. The goals of government may not be misplaced, but the problem is how to achieve it. And we should remember, God's laws are perfect. Our own laws are not. I wanted to comment a little bit here about Srila Prabhupada makes the comment about, you know, current governments being thieves and rogues. You know, and sometimes when we read statements like this, we wonder, you know, is that really true? He says this in the purports, and certainly we see in governments around the world many, many examples of politicians being thieves and rogues. Many of them have been criminally prosecuted for various improprieties, and certainly we see that. But can we say that they're all thieves and rogues? Well, if we, you know, analyze and understand who is a thief, we can see it's pretty broad-based. You know, Krishna says very clearly in the third chapter, he who does not do yajna, sacrifice, is a thief. All the provisions that we are using around us, they don't belong to us. They certainly don't belong to the country who claims to have this land. They have just temporarily marked, this is my land. America is a great example. The Native Americans claimed it to be their land. And then the Europeans came and claimed it to be their land. And then the Americans, so-called, claimed it to be their land. Well, who's going to claim it next? We are just temporary claiming this. But we all know it is Krishna's land. And so to use the resources of the world, we must offer back first to Vishnu. There must be yajna. And one who does not do yajna, Krishna says very clearly, is a thief. Right in the beginning of the third chapter, is a thief. And so, how many of our, you know, leaders are doing yajna? We can say very few, to maybe not many at all. And so there is this thieving existence within our current rulers. That is very, very clear. Right? So if Srila Prabhupada makes the point here that in this state of irreligious activities, people cannot be happy despite all economic development. You know, governments have so many goals to reduce unemployment. But if you see our Vedic principles can help achieve all of government's goals. Reducing unemployment, that is a goal. Find a job for everyone. The problem is, in modern convention, we're trying to find specific jobs, and we have created a hierarchy of these are good jobs, these are bad jobs. And so we set aside people's, you know, quality and nature. But we know our Varnashram Dharma, our Varnashram system, it does this perfectly. It engages every living entity in an occupation that is suitable to its nature. And the various people working cooperate together, like the different limbs of the body work together. The hands support the torso and the legs, and the legs support the torso and the head directs the arms and the legs. Like this, the different realms of society work together very nicely. So this Varnashram Dharma that Krishna himself established, it has the great ability to reduce unemployment and increase job satisfaction. Yeah, that is the goal of any employer. By finding the nature of each individual and finding suitable work for such a person. So our, you know, this goal of government, again, it can be achieved by our Vedic principles. These governments want to reduce crime. How do we reduce crime? By building more severe prisons? Having more police officers on the streets? No, none of that is getting to the root cause. We have to get to the root cause of crime. The root cause of our crime is lust, uncontrolled lust. And how to control this all-devouring enemy? Krishna again explains in Bhagavad Gita, one must self-realize, understand, I am part and parcel of Krishna, and begin the practice of devotional service, and follow the regulative principles, restrict the senses. So our Krishna conscious principles can bring about these goals. You know, we talk about environmental cleanup. Well, the first environment we need to clean is the environment of our heart. If we eliminate this greed from our heart, this lust from our heart, then we have scope to actually clean up the land around us. But until then, putting some scrubbers on a smokestack and putting some carbon credits that we can trade on an open market, not going to create long-term results. Again, our Vedic principles have the ability to achieve all of the goals of government. You know, they want to increase per capita income. Right? Governments celebrate that per citizen, we are making more money. But what is the goal of making more money? It is for supposed happiness. But has increased wealth led to happiness? Is there more happiness in America or other wealthy countries of the world compared to lower wealth countries? No. There's more depression here than anywhere in the world. So Prabhupada is saying, economic development is not going to lead to happiness. Well, what can lead to happiness? Brahma, Bhuta, Prasanatma. Again, engaging in devotional service. When one understands, my happiness comes from my awakening my relationship with Krishna. Simple living and high thinking is the key to happiness. Not high living and simple thinking, which is what is being propagated today. So, this opportunity for good ruling is definitely there if we apply these principles. And the goals of the governments may not be so misplaced. It's just the means that are missing. And so Prabhupada ends the purport, giving us some hope. However, in Kali Yuga, the democratic government can be captured by Krishna-conscious people. Imagine what would happen, what could happen. And it's possible. By the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, every town and village is going to begin to chant the holy names of the Lord. When the citizens understand that my happiness comes in relationship with Krishna, they will begin in this democratic world to elect leaders who will propagate such principles. So by our means of spreading this message of Krishna consciousness at the grassroots level, governments can be conquered by Krishna conscious people. And we're seeing glimmers of that, great glimmers of that today. And if we see, in ISKCON alone, devotees have met, great world leaders. President Obama met Radhanath Maharaj. Prime Minister of the UK has come to the temple and met many devotees. They've come to Parliament. Prime Minister Modi has met Gopal Krishna Maharaj several times. So we're seeing this interaction at some of the superpowers of the world. So while it seems daunting, it is possible. And whatever we can do, our small part in spreading this knowledge and understanding and helping to explain that this knowledge, this relationship with Krishna is the key to success, then that can feed up into ruling society. Unfortunately, Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the prediction of our current state in the 12th canto. Srila Prabhupada comments about how the residents will flee to the countryside In the 12th canto, in the first and second chapter, there's a very vivid description of how degraded ruling will become. And it's quite startling, and actually it's quite real. It's amazing how this situation was predicted, you know, thousands of years ago, when ruling was done with such righteousness. And today we see those predictions unfortunately coming true, with Shudras and thieves ascending to the leadership positions and, you know, harassing citizens to the point where they, you know, feel oppressed and have to flee to the remote areas to escape this rule. So, you know, this is what we see in this verse of the 16th chapter, 4th verse, establishing this first glorification of Prithu Maharaj, saying that his, you know, greatness is due to inspiring citizens to follow the scriptural injunctions and to very strongly suppress the irreligious principles. You know, stopping the irreligious principles is as important as promoting the spiritual principles. So with that, I'll stop here and we can have some discussion. Any corrections or clarifications anyone can offer would be greatly appreciated, or any questions. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for the very, very insightful class. Anyone has any questions or comments? Let's go.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for such a beautiful class. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for the beautiful class, Prabhuji. I don't have any questions. If anybody having any questions or comments for Prabhuji, can go ahead.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dhanu Kram, Auguri Sushila Prabhupada, Guru Maharaj. Very, very beautiful class, Prabhuji. I had a kind of a question. Initially, when you had mentioned about Prithu Maharaj, when the sages were glorifying Prithu Maharaj, and he was not liking it, and he didn't want to listen to that. So, kind of, when we, in our terms, when we glorify the spiritual master and the pure devotees, could you kind of reconcile how we can do that in the, and doing it in the right consciousness, but it might still be perceived kind of a psychophancy sometimes? So how do we kind of reconcile in that way?
Yeah, but you said perceived as what? I hear that word.
Perceived as like psychophancy. I mean, like people thinking artificially, maybe it might be done with the right consciousness, but it might be perceived by others. Okay, that glorification is...
Yeah.
Artificial?
Yeah, well, first thing, you know, our glorification should be sincere. And the sincerity is based on the understanding of what fortune we have to be in the association of such devotees and what great gift we have, right? When you receive a present, somebody gives you a birthday present, we express gratitude to the extent we appreciate that gift sincerely. Otherwise, it becomes gratuitous. So like that, when we, the more we really realize and recognize the great fortune we have to be in the association of such great devotees, and the rarity of coming in contact with the pure soul, then our expression of gratitude and glorification will be sincere. And it's not so important what others around us think about our expression of gratitude. It's more important what is in our consciousness. Because Krishna knows our intent. He knows. I mean, we may express great gratitude so beautifully and perfectly that it inspires others. But if in our heart we are simultaneously holding resentment and envy of such person we are glorifying, but we are doing so just to fit a requirement or a social etiquette, then it doesn't have as much value. So more important is not, what others may think about our glorification, and more importantly is what is the true nature in my heart as I'm expressing glorification. Just like, I mentioned in the beginning, when we say Dandavat Pranam, it becomes, somewhat mechanical. And it can be, at least. But are we actually in our heart offering Dandavat to such person? That is the question that we should try to answer. And so, I'll maybe add another point. You didn't quite ask this, but just to the point of, Prithu Maharaj is kind of in some way not rejecting, but declining this glorification. Yet the reciters are offering that, and so is that creating a combative situation of sorts? No, the devotee does not enjoy to be glorified, and you can see the verse that I read: a person who is famous and powerful does not like to hear himself be praised, and so that is the responsibility of the great devotee. But it is also the responsibility of the follower to offer appreciation and thanks to such devotee for the purpose of purification. And so the great devotee, the spiritual master, let's take that example, will accept such glorification, though they don't want it. They will accept it as a service to Krishna. And what does that mean? It means that, let's just take the very tangible example. The spiritual master will accept, a very elaborate Vyas Puja celebration. Well, the spiritual master is trying to imbue the sense of surrender and worship to Krishna. And so by receiving that worship is helping his followers inculcate that movement. But the spiritual man does not enjoy that worship. They're actually quite pained by it and troubled by it. Yet they endure it for the purpose of advancing the spiritual consciousness of the living entities, the fallen living entities. So, it is that both positions are correct. It is our responsibility to offer appreciation and glorification for those all around us. The Uttama Adhikari, he offers respects and glorification to everyone. He doesn't see anybody as lower. He sees everybody as higher because he's seeing Krishna within everyone. And so, it is our responsibility. And it's for our benefit. It is for our purification of our heart to offer such glorification. But it should be sincere. So maybe I'll pause there if that's okay, or if there's a follow-up.
Yeah, Prabhuji, thank you so much. Just in that context, for example, in the Vyas Puja, when we are writing the offering, so can one... is it perceived as basically like glorifying the spiritual master at that point of time in the offering?
Yeah, that's what the Vyas Puja offering is. It's a glorification and an appreciation for what the spiritual master has done and is doing. And the best way to read the Srila the Prabhupada Vyasapuja book that comes out each year, it's just an ocean of nectar, seeing and how great devotees are glorifying and appreciating Srila Prabhupada. It's a great guide for us in how we can also develop this mood. Again, offering prayers is not easy. It's difficult, right? It's what do we say? It's hard.
Yeah.
It's not so clear. But we just do it according to our capability. Prahlad Maharaj said, whatever your ability is, offer some glorification. Mm-hmm. And in time, Krishna will inspire us to offer more and more adequate. Again, we'll never be able to fully glorify anyways. You can never get to the bottom of Krishna's glories or his devotees' glories. So we do the best we can. And don't worry what others think. Worry about what Krishna thinks and what you think.
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for inviting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Very wonderful presentation. It reminds me of one thing, in the nature of your devotional service. I want your comment, that example given in Bhakti Samit Singh, the apparent and real. What are apparently is a devotional service means that which gives joy to Krishna, but the reality is the intent of the person who is performing. That's why those examples that although the asuras, they give apparently so much joy to Krishna because whatever Krishna does is very joyful to us.
In that context, in Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service, this very important word, anukuliena, is there. That our intent must be to please Krishna. Not just that Krishna is pleased. We may perform an activity that pleases Krishna. Like, Krishna enjoyed and had pleasure in fighting with the demons. But that was not the intent of the demons, so it is not pure devotional service. And so what's more important is not the end result, but the intent. And that's why Srila Rupa Goswami, when he defines pure devotional service, he says it must be anukulyena. And the intent in devotional service also, it's not for us to judge. When we see others performing devotional service, we have this tendency sometimes to judge. But how we can judge their intent, what's in their heart? We cannot. So sometimes we create these, this is high service, low service, this person is doing nice, and we can see certain things. But intent is so important. What is our objective? Just like in offering prayers. We may offer beautiful prayers, but what's in the core of my heart? That's what's relevant. So. Thank you, Bhagavad, for bringing up that point.
And one more point, Prabhu, I wanted to expand. Conversely, Mother Yashoda had good intention to protect the milk which she wanted for Krishna, and her intent was good, but was her action was not pleasing Krishna. Krishna thought, I am having so much fun taking milk from your breast, and you think something is more important than me. But because Mother Yashoda did not have any intent to bring any harm to Krishna, rather to protect those things dear to Krishna. So she showed more affection to those things which were dear to Krishna. And so this behavior is considered devotional by the acharyas, apparently and real. So apparently and reality, that should be always checked. It can be checked through the intent, like that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, very, very nice. One of the rasas that Rupa Goswami explains is this mana rasa. And I like that Srila Prabhupada explains it as seemingly angry. You know, Radharani exhibits this mood to Krishna. That's another wonder. You know, why she's giving Krishna a hard time? She's expressing anger to Krishna, and she's running away and chastised, rebuking, and this, that, and the other. And, you know, Lalita Devi has very sweet interactions that are very sharp in external, you know, observations. But it is seemingly anger how it's being presented, because the purpose of that is to give Krishna the pleasure of that rasa. Their intent is simply to please Krishna. If they, being angry at Krishna, gives him pleasure, then so be it. That is the purity of their love. Mother Yashoda's love is such. No concern for their own happiness or satisfaction, but simply to please Krishna. And so, and in the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining the Shikshashtakam prayers, and he's explaining the last verse, this unconditional love, he goes, he explains, you know, the mood of his greatest devotee, Srimati Radharani. And so unconditional. She says, if my devastation brings about happiness to Krishna, then my devastation is my happiness. So you can see how pure the intent is in serving. And so, as you very nicely pointed out, we cannot understand these pastimes with our own whimsical explanations. We must go to our acharyas to explain why this is happening. Why Mother Yashoda is chasing Krishna with a stick? How is that bhakti? She's going to spank him. How is that devotional service? But we know it is the highest of devotional service, as explained in Dhammarastaka. There is no greater service than such. So, but it takes explanation, because our own observation of external circumstances will lead us astray. So we must depend on our acharyas. Thank you, Bhaji, for bringing two very nice points to the discussion.
One more point, just comes by your good explanation. When we glorify devotees and even spiritual master, and many times we become so much affected by the formality, how people think about us, or the others think about us, rather than really what we think. The main focus has to be our intent, and not so much worry about whether I will be receiving attention or anything like that. But material atmosphere affects most of us, you know, in the conditioned state. And but we cannot hide from Krishna. That awareness must be sustained all the time. And in Krishna consciousness, our every activity is to make us remember Krishna. Make us remember Krishna in what sense? That Krishna knows what we are up to. And ultimately, in ultimate result, that alone will count, what Krishna thinks about us. Everything else becomes secondary. Everything else becomes just circumstantial. It comes and goes. What really sticks, what really remains ultimately is it. What Krishna thinks about me, because Krishna is supremely conscious, correct? We may forget, but Krishna is conscious of every iota of existence. And we are not, we cannot get away from that. We cannot just hide away from Krishna even a bit. So that awareness will keep us always on the edge of staying away from many unwanted things which creep in so magically by the influence of time. And the amazing thing is that we are discussing this this transcendence of Srimad Bhagavatam in this age. That's the most amazing thing which has transpired by the instrumentation of Srila Prabhupada, and we are reaping the amazing truth. And oftentimes what happens that we take it for granted that, yeah, this is, we have nice atmosphere, society and everything. And we take it casually. No, it has been given to us. We can never claim that we ever deserve it. Although, potentially in human form of life, we are endowed with that capacity to make it all the way. But unless we feel that the contrast with awareness that what we were and what we could have been and what we have been given, so that sense of urgency will then come if we sustain this awareness of contrast that due to, although being utterly unqualified in many ways, we have been pulled towards the supreme joy or the destination of supreme achievement. So that feeling of indebtedness and gratefulness as you described, it has to become genuine from the core of our heart, not just the mouth service. You know, so that point was very wonderfully explained. Thank you.
Thank you. Now you inspired me to comment again. So if you'll tolerate, thank you. You made two points that I, you know, this genuine appreciation, and that we can stick to specifically the realm of the spiritual master. You know, we can measure our sincerity and genuineness by what is my sense of appreciation of spiritual master and my prayer of glorification when I am in front of my in front of my spiritual master compared to when I'm separated from him. The point I'm making is that our expression of appreciation and glorification of spiritual master should happen every day. Not just when we are in physical association of Guru. When we are in physical association of Guru, of course, we feel maybe more inspired. But in reality, the closer we can bring those two, of how intensely we are appreciating and glorifying the spiritual master in our heart, in our one-on-one personal conversations with the Lord, with the spiritual master, that are happening, because this is a transcendental spiritual relationship. It does not require physical proximity to engage in relationship with Guru. It requires consciousness. And so we can kind of measure our sincerity by, you know, when I'm singing the Guravastaka prayers, how sincerely am I feeling the emotion of gratitude to the spiritual master? And that can help us become more sincere as we kind of compare and contrast when I am in the physical presence versus my day-to-day interactions. The second comment I wanted to make is, you know, Krishna's omnipresence is all-knowing. It cuts both ways. It's very, very comforting because we don't really need to worry what anyone else thinks because Krishna knows. He knows whether we did that service or not. He knows how we tried to do that service, even if it maybe failed externally. He knows what our endeavor and intent was. So he knows. So we don't have to worry if someone else is not giving us the appropriate recognition or maybe, you know, criticizing. Don't worry. The main person knows. Krishna knows. That's very comforting in those times. It's also, and the other side of that is, Krishna knows. And so we may have had great success in some service or done something, but Krishna knows what was our real intent. What was inside of our heart? What was our consciousness when we were singing that, you know, arti for the Lord, or when we were dressing Him or cooking for Him? He knows. So it's both comforting and also keeps us, you know, on guard both ways as omnipresence. So. Thank you, Bodhi, for having a question.
Beautiful, beautiful. So beautifully expressed. One more thing, can I express? Time is running out, but devotees are very tolerant. I really appreciate. So, when we glorify the spiritual master, how we sustain this? Because as we are progressing, the sense of achievement comes in the conditioned state of our existence. The whole world is designed, the education, everything. We follow some discipline, we follow a course for 5 years, 2 years, 6 months, we get a certificate of being qualified. Everybody is just giving us the certificate that we are qualified. And so this is the converse, what we are, the spiritual life is very paradoxical in reality to what we experience in the world affairs. So even when we glorify the spiritual master, I give the analogy of a father. You know, we have developed a love bond with our father in our material dealing, whatever. And we never think that someone else be my father, even if we see somebody, different people, you know, or different color, or one's father maybe even handicapped or whatever, but we have experienced the love bond with him. We never think of replacing him. I wish someone else was would be my father. In the same way, the spiritual master's glory for the disciple, we see the spiritual master so glorious, so blessed, that even an iota of that glory, if I can be blessed with, I will be like drowning. So that appreciation, because our appreciation should not be based on material estimations. The spiritual master's position is transcendental. So if somebody asks the question, can a spiritual master be imperfect? You know, somebody asked this question several years ago. So this, first of all, the very question is very erroneous. And if one ventures to say, oh yeah, a spiritual master can be imperfect, then he has committed another error. Because perfect and imperfect, these are the terms of this material platform. The spiritual master is the Swarupa. Spiritual master is an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we don't see him in his Swarupa, then as the Upadeshamrita describes, one sees the dirt even in Ganges water. But dirt is not Ganges water. Ganges water is transcendental completely. So that understanding, then it will never allow us to think that, oh, now I have become more qualified, more advanced, and this and that. And, you know, this feeling of a sense of becoming more qualified, this sense of accomplishment is the downfall on the path of devotional service. Rather, one feels so inundated with the sense of gratitude, and no matter how much one achieves externally, apparently, his sense of gratitude, it's like somebody saved my life. You know, I was drowning and somebody pulled me. And now, no matter how much I attain externally, can I really repay that person? Suppose someone becomes a billionaire and he says, oh, this person saved my life, so let me spare $500 million to repay. We cannot really repay, because without being saved, we would be nowhere. So it's an eternal sense of gratitude unendingly. That will sustain our devotional fervor, and we will be able to overcome any so-called atrocities which this material world will offer. Even sometimes in our devotional, apparently devotees reciprocation and dealings, sometimes not so pleasant experiences. But we will be able to overlook, because what we are up to, that will make us separate from all the negative things which are coming in our way. We will stay focused that we have been saved and we are on the way to the absolute, that nothing of this world apparently will deter us from going all the way. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Guruji, for nice comments. And my only final comment would be that we extend the glorification not only to our spiritual master, because our spiritual master is pleased when we glorify and respect and appreciate all devotees. Sometimes out of love, but also out of, maybe some impurity in the heart, we become, sort of selective in our appreciation, respect, and glorification. So while we've been speaking quite a bit to create some practical connectivity to discuss our appreciation of spiritual master, let us not forget that what pleases the spiritual master is one who appreciates, respects, and glorifies all devotees in the path of Krishna consciousness. And so we can avoid the potential for, this kind of concept of mine and yours. We're all under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, Gauranga Mahaprabhu, and the mercy of Krishna. Any other comments or questions from anyone?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Dandavat Pranam. Very beautiful question answer session, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for such a beautiful answers. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mahaprabhu. Dandavat Pranam.
Hare Krishna, is there anybody having any more questions or realizations? Krishna Prabhuji, thank you so much once again for such a beautiful class. If there are no more questions and realizations, let us end the call here by offering one question. Yes, Vancha Kalpatarubhyasya Kripasimubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavipyo Namo Namahanant Koti Vaishnavrindaki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai His Grace Nitya Krishna Prabhuji Ki Jai. Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Dhanyavaad.